Hi, everybody. This is Armand DeMille with you, with the positive mind, some modulating. WBAI 99.5 FM on your dial, bringing you ideas, concepts, and guests to help you lead a more positively minded life. Hey, listen, friends. I got such a week planned for you, a week of information. University of the Air, psychology at your fingertips. Learn about the human mind and learn about yourself. Learn about other people, learn about you, learn about your interaction with the world. This week, I bring you three programs about human functioning and dynamics, and I'm going to talk about people related to love. But this week, I want to bring you three programs about human functioning and dynamics. Today, I'm going to talk about people for whom love is toxic. Yes. Yes, my friends, contrary to what everybody will tell you, love is not always a good thing. In fact, if you think about it, for most people, love is a horrible thing. Because most people who are depressed are usually depressed because of some mishap related to love. I run a mental health center. We have a number of therapists that work here. Those therapists are almost invariably the primary complaint that someone has when they come in is depression as a result of an ending love relationship. So if love hurts so much, why do you want to do it? Well, on the other hand, a terrific love is a terrific thing. It's great. It's wonderful. So at its very best, love is, like, worth living for. Right? At its mediocre, love is, makes you feel safe. At its worst, love will make you kill yourself. So we've got three levels, and there are a lot more people who kill themselves over love than there are people who are celebrating their love at the top level. Most people are somewhere around the middle. You know, it's nice to have somebody to come home to. But I want to talk, and I want to talk about celebrating love, and I want to talk about love itself as being a wonderful thing for people. But what about people who don't want to have anybody to love? What about people who don't care? Now, you're going to say, like every shrink says, oh, you gotta care. You really do care. You're just not admitting you care. It's not true. There are people who don't care. They don't care about other people. Not that they don't care about other people. They may care about other people. But for them, love is almost an invasion in their lives. They don't want to have it. You know, I mean, they have it if it's there. Do you remember that movie, The Station Agent, with where Finbar McBride is the station agent? And I recommend to all of you, you rent this movie because it's a wonderful thing. It was played by Peter Dinklage, I remember. Finbar McBride is this guy who is a loner. And he's an absolute loner. And he runs into a gregarious, narcissistic, Enneagram 7 kind of guy who is all over the place. And they try to have a relationship. And somewhere in there a woman is thrown is a relationship too. But Finbar is always saying, leave me alone. Leave me alone. I just want to be... And he's not depressed. He's just alone. In fact, people who are loners are very often not depressed at all. They're just loners. It's an adaptation. It's the way they are. And they're not loners only because they hate people, but they are trying to control their environment. They like things to be just the way they like them to be. So they'd rather be at home alone, strumming their guitar, making up music. You know, every now and then you see one of them come out on American Idol. You know, you see somebody who's coming up on a trial for American Idol, and they sat in their basement practicing the guitar, but there was nobody there to tell them if it was good or not. So they kept practicing it to their own expertise until they got a sense that it was perfect. But nobody there to tell you when you're making a mistake. Perfect could be anything. And then you suddenly hear them appear trying out for something like American Idol or some other talent contest, and they're horrendous. they're horrible because nobody was there to tell them it's not such good music. But I also have to admit that I thought the same thing of Bob Dylan, who was a loner. Now, there's another guy who just stayed. He doesn't care so much about people. He didn't care about marriage. He didn't care about relationships. He cared about him and his own music. And when I was a kid, I met him, and I heard him sing, and I thought, oh, this guy should have other people listen to him before he comes out and sings publicly. Right? Yeah. There I was. And my bad. Anyway, let's go back to loving people. People, some people need love. Everybody feels like, you know, on some level they need love, but there are some people who are such a mess when they get into a relationship that it would be nice for them to abstain. You know, they should have a convent where people could go just not to worship God and become nuns, but just to abstain from all relationships for a little while, you know. I guess they call it Buddhism. Something like that. You know, you let it all go. Well, okay, so let's go back to these private guys, these private people. And they're all around you, my friends, but you may not see them because they're kind of inconspicuous. You see, they don't want to be noticed. They're not there to be noticed, to be seen, to be invaded. You invite them to a party. I have one guy I've invited to parties for years, and he's always, oh, I've always got something to do, I got something to do. But he doesn't have anything to do. He just doesn't want to go to a party because he's a loner, you see. So now, a guy named Richard Friedman, psychiatrist, wrote an article in today's New York Times where he talks about the psychiatric illnesses and that among them is this one kind of person, the private person. That's not a psychiatric diagnostic term. It's sometimes called the schizoid personality, but that's not particularly accurate either. Schizoid meaning that you're living your own world. But your own world could be a perfectly normal world. You're just private. You marry one of these folks? It's hard for them to get married in the first place, but let's say you do hook up with one, and they kind of passively agree to marry you, and you see them uninvolved with you, uninvolved with the children, uninvolved in the world. They actually like to get involved with children, by the way. They much more than they do with adults. So they kind of, you know, they get involved with the children, and it's a nice thing for them. But really, they're uninvolved. They don't care. And there's nothing wrong with them necessarily. It's just the way they are. Now, when it becomes a disorder, when it becomes really, really pathological, as we say in the trade, here are the diagnostic criteria for a schizoid personality disorder. It's a pervasive pattern of detachment from social relationships, a restricted range of emotional expression and interpersonal exchanges. What that means is when you're talking to them, they have very few expression of emotions. They don't show many feelings. It begins in early adulthood and is present at a variety of contexts and usually appears in some of the following. Four out of any of these seven. If you have four out of these seven, figure you fall into this category. Number one, neither desires nor enjoys close relationships, including being part of a family. Now, there's an interesting thing. Don't you think Thanksgiving is coming along and the person wants to go to Thanksgiving dinner? No, Ma, I got this. They avoid the family dinner. They don't want to be part of a family. Family's too chaotic. This is one of those animals in nature who are very sensitive, and they just figure the best way to do it is I'll crawl up in my shell a little like a turtle. You think turtles talk to each other? You know, a little like kind of go inside. They almost always choose solitary activities. They like solitary activities, things to do on their own, play guitar by themselves, build Lego blocks, you know, whatever they do. Number three, they have little, if any, interest in having sexual experiences with another person. Now, this is one group, but then there's another group of withdrawn people who feel the sexual urge, and we're going to talk about what they're like in sex when they have a sexual involvement. But usually they have little, if any, interest in having sexual experience. Number four, they take pleasure in few activities, very, very limited number. Number five, they lack close friends and confidence other than first-degree relatives. You know, very close. It's the only people like brother or sister. Number six, they appear indifferent to the praise or criticism of others because it's nice when you're shielded like that, you know. As they say when I was a kid, porco spinada, which means you're a porcupine. You have these things all over you and people can't get near you, and so you don't get hurt. And then finally, you show an emotional coldness, detachment, or sometimes what they call flattened affectivity. Flattened affectivity is flat affect. It means a flat face, a blah kind of face. They walk up, look around you now. You see any people like this? They're private. They may be reading a newspaper. They may not even be aware of you. They don't welcome you. There are some of you who work in rooms with lots of desks and you pass by. It'd be rare that one of these would take a job in a place like that. But ever since they went from offices to cubicles, some of these people, the private people, they are become private in their cubicles, and they just always happen to be turned away from the door or on the phone or something every time somebody walks by because they don't want to talk to anyone. And it's not just you. This is Armand DeMille with you. It's a Positive Mind. We're talking about people to whom love can be a very difficult, if not toxic, thing. Now, I want to talk to you about sex and this kind of private person. When they're sexual people, and by sexual I mean you have a heightened sexual awareness, you know. You get stimulated easily. Pictures turn you on. Smells turn you on. Things turn you on, even though you're a private person. But if you're a solo person, when you get into relationships, it has an interesting angle to it. You have this kind of secret information that you tell the people you're intimate with. And this phrase, many of you are going to remember hearing this from somebody. You know, I never told this to anybody. You know, I never told this to anybody. So when they let somebody in their room, it's like a kid who's playing alone in a room and he never lets anybody in. Then he lets somebody in and he welcomes them in. And when he welcomes them in, now he tells them secrets. And he gives them secrets. So secret confidences becomes a part of it. You may recognize that. There's always some degree of tension between the two people. It's almost like if you're living with them, they kind of live separate from you. If they're there, if it's a sexual partner, you can have a big sexual experience. But then the private person has this tendency to really separate quickly. In other words, they kind of disappear. Don't answer their phone. And it's hard to tell because you wonder who they're going out with, you know? You're wondering what else they're doing. But if you are the exception in their lives, they're going to try to pull back to their caves, pull back to their privacy for a little period of time. They pull into their various worlds, and in their various worlds, again, in a relationship, they have a lot of fantasy. Because remember, this kind of person who's a private person spends their time all alone making stuff up in their mind, because they have this very interesting mental activity, and they're thinking all the time, and they create things. They talk about what it's going to be like living in a castle, and I'm in my castle with you, and you're flying on a dragon, and whatever it is, they make up in their minds. And it's kind of in their own world. At the unhealthy range, this longing for love, for lost love, you know, they'll have somebody for a while and then that person goes away and they can get so involved in it. They can become self-destructive. They could really hurt themselves. This is Armand DeMille talking with you. There's a kind of an automatic life to to the person who's a private person. You know, they kind of, it's called automata. Automata, that's a word. Automata means like robots. They're uninterested in social relationships or interactions. They have a limited emotional repertoire. These people are loners. They confide only in first-degree relatives again. They're anhedonic. Now, anhedonic is an interesting thing because they don't really find anything that pleasurable that they would get attached to it. See, it's kind of keeping a distance, keeping a distance, keeping a distance. But they're not necessarily sad or dysphoric or unhappy. They could be asexual, like somebody very cerebral, or they could have a high sexuality in their own private world. This is Armand DeMille with you. I want to take some of your calls today about this. A very interesting man did a study in Toronto. And he talked about the holiday complex. Now, we're coming up on a holiday on Wednesday, by the way, tomorrow. I'm having a guest on the air who's going to be talking about bipolar disorder again. And this is just fascinating stuff. He's going to be talking about bipolar 2, which is a different kind of bipolar disorder or manic depressive disorder. And on Thursday, I will be with you, and I'll be talking about the flexible human mind, the flexibility of the mind. So those of you who have a chance to listen on Thursday Thanksgiving, I love spending it with you. I'll be down here broadcasting with you for sure. For sure I'll be here. So let's talk about this holiday complex just for a moment, and then I'll take your calls. It said, Western civilization is the story of conflict between two personality types, the obsessive-compulsive type and the totally withdrawn type. Now, obsessive-compulsive people are the people whose lives are dominated by rituals, by order, by cleanliness, by lining things up, by doing things over and over again. These are people who seek control. They're always looking to be in control of the outside world. While the other kind are the escapists. So we have two kinds of people, according to this. The people who are ritualistically, over and over again, trying to achieve things, get things done, be in control, the obsessive-compulsive lifestyle. And the other lifestyle, which is a total withdrawal. That makes sense. They battle to determine which role is going to be better, and then it kind of comes around the holidays. You see the manifestation of this when all of the holiday advertising is appealing to who? To the obsessive compulsive. You must buy this. You have to get this for your kids. You got to go shopping. You have 24 shopping days. You have 23 and a half shopping days. The menorah, you know, everything, the number of lights coming down. Everything is to appeal to your compulsiveness so that you will get online with everybody else and you will do this thing like everybody else does and compete for it and get the best presents. And then you hope for presents and you wait up at night and you wait for Santa Claus to come so you can rush downstairs to open as many presents, compulsive, obsessive, think about it all the time. So all the holidays are about obsessive, compulsive behaviors. Thanksgiving, you know, what is Thanksgiving? We're going to invite everybody. We have to have enough coasters, you know? We have to have coasters all over the place. We got to get the turkey, and we got to get the tofu, and we got to get the whatever we're going to get. And we got to line it all up, and it all has to come out at exactly the right amount of time so that when it comes out, it's all warm on the table, and everybody sit down now because we're doing it. Oh, my God, my cupboard, I spilled the gravy. Kind of obsessive, compulsive stuff. Not that it's not happy, because everybody's in it. You know, it's like a game. Oh, did you get the dishes? Yes, I got the dishes. Did you bring the salad? Yes, I got the salad going. Everybody sit down. Then everybody sits down for a meal, if you have a lot of everybody's in a family, and they go whoosh. You can feel the wind go out of them, you know, for a moment, because they've all been wrapped up in this preparation for the Thanksgiving meal. And then luckily at some tables they say, let's give thanks. And they put their hands around the table and you hold each other's hand. You know what you're really doing? You're stopping for a minute together. You're just stopping to take a breath because you're stepping out of the obsessive compulsive insanity that kind of whips up every holiday. So obsessive compulsive is one way, and the other way is the person who says, I'm not going to be involved. I'm not going to be involved. I pull myself back. I'm not going to think about Thanksgiving, Christmas, or holidays. But everywhere you look, there are lights everywhere. They're coming into your house. They play music. I remember once I escaped to a Caribbean island because I didn't want to get involved in Christmas craziness. And I landed on the island, and all they did was play Christmas music all that time. It wouldn't stop. Everywhere I went to the beach. And I was on the beach, and they were playing it on loudspeakers in the background. Yeah, I know. I know. And this was in November. So, that's that kind of thing. So anyway, people who are in love, people who don't care about love, if you care about love, you take the obsessive-compulsive route, and you try to form love by these rituals and things like that, which I don't blame you. It's a good thing, sitting down, having a wonderful meal, looking in the eyes of people you love, your family, it's a wonderful thing. Or there's the other way. Reject it all. Be alone. Sit in your basement, play your guitar. You know, close down your ears and do it your way. Either way, there is a statement. One statement is, I need people. The other statement is, I don't. So for the people who don't need people, very often they have a group of people who are trying to convince them that they do need people. And they introduce them, they set them up with blind dates, they give them people to meet. And you're feeding practically poison to somebody when you do that. Because if they're loners and you give them somebody who wants a relationship, they have no skills, they have no way to deal with it, and they don't want it in the first place. It's trying to teach a child who doesn't want to do ballet to stand on their toes. You know, it's painful, and he never likes it. This is Armand DeMille with you with a Positive Mind. Telephone calls, 212-209-2900. What about you? Have you ever been in love, or are you a loner? Have you ever been in love with a loner? Or are you a loner? And I want to talk about your love experiences. That's the question today. That's the thing today. Are you a loner? Are you in love with a loner? Have you been in love with a loner? Have you had a relationship with a loner? What's that been like? 212-209-2900. I'm going to start taking your calls right now. This is Armand DeMille. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, Dr. DeMille. I wanted to ask you a question about the obsessive compulsive disorder.
Yes.
When you talk about people that are sort of getting crazy about taking care of errands and stuff like that, are you talking about someone who's like just situational OCD as compared to someone who's been that way since they were, you know, a toddler?
Well, it's kind of interesting. I don't know about toddlerism because sometimes, you know, let me start this way. When a person is under stress, when any person is under stress, do you know the most logical thing for a person to do? Not logical, but the most natural thing for a person under stress to do besides run away, right, is they organize. When a person feels like they are disorganized and that their world is disorganized, they try to focus their attention on organizing. So most people under stress become organizers.
Okay.
And even if they're not organized themselves, they try to organize under stress. Now, a child, let's say a child faces a traumatic event, a beating, alcoholic parents, sexual stuff thrown in their direction, you know, all stuff. If that happens to a child can go from being a perfectly normal child to a child who now spends their entire life counting baseball scores. Do you know what I mean? Because it's the only thing that saves them. They want their mind to be active. They don't want to think about the pain they're living. So for some people, it becomes from this moment on. For other people, it seems to have been there the whole time. And it may even have some genetic traits.
Well, can I tell you something?
Sure.
I have the disorder myself in a very severe way. I'm on very heavy medication for it. My mother has always had the disorder. So that's why I asked you the question.
Sure. And how does your disorder manifest? What does it do? How does your obsessive compulsiveness do? Hand washing?
Actually tracing the shapes of objects incessantly. But that's
is that with a pencil or tracing them with your eye?
With my fingers.
With your fingers, you trace the shapes of objects incessantly.
But that's only the tip of the iceberg. My main problem is the obsessing, the rumination. It's like an endless loop, and I can't achieve closure on my thoughts.
Now, what happens when you have a romance, an active romance?
Well, what happened is that I was a failure in almost every job I took during a relationship with a girl. I would get fired incessantly because my internal thoughts were dominating me to a point where I was not seeing everything that was in front of me as far as work. My mind was half inside with the rumination and half outside, so I would get fired. I'd miss things. And that would screw up a relationship with a girl because obviously I was messing up my life.
Yeah, or, you know, it's hard for you to say you were messing up your life. We'd say your mind was messing up your
life. Well, there you go.
You know, because certainly you had no real will in it.
Yeah, you got that right.
Yeah, how do you feel nowadays? I mean, do you have any more control over it than you did?
Well, yes. The rumination is much, much less because I have enough drugs in my blood to poison half of New York.
Yeah, but it seems to have worked at keeping you at the level that you need in order to function like somewhat, you know, to feel somewhat normal.
Yeah. I just wanted to say one thing, though.
Sure.
There are people with the disorder where it's described as being the inability to achieve closure. That's all I wanted to just
You know, that's that. Really well said, and I think we're going to bring that and talk about that. I think you're absolutely right. And especially, you know, for somebody who's tracing with your fingertips, because you're always finding closure. Thanks for calling in. What's your name?
Nayef.
Nayef, thank you for calling.
Okay.
All right. This is Armand DeMille with you at The Positive Mind. We're going to take a short break. When we come back, I'm going to play you that Chopin I promised you. And then we will continue with your phone calls at 212-209-2900. Be back in a bit. Ashkenazi, or Ashkenazi, Vladimir Ashkenazi playing Chopin, the Waltz in B minor, opus 69, from his album Chopin Favorites, Favourites, by Vladimir Ashkenazi. Now listen, my friends, if you ever want to, if you're interested in any of the music I play on the air, you can now find it, always, by going to the website. If you go to the website, my website, thepositivemind.com, you will find on each day, the archive of each program, I tell you exactly what music I played today. So you could own it, you could have it, you could just look it up. So it's there. So instead of calling us and saying, what was that tune? You can now find out yourself. I do love technology. We're going to be talking about that on Thursday. Now, tomorrow I'm going to talk about people who, for whom love is essential but cataclysmic. You know, the manic depressive personality disorder. Boy, that's a tough one. But today I am talking to you about people who find love either totally unnecessary or toxic. Yep. Yeah, there are folks, I mean, we always have the assumption that a lonely person, a person alone is a lonely person. Absolutely not. Absolutely not. There are some people who are just plain loners. They want to be alone and they don't want to have a relationship. That's the way they're going to survive the most. You know, if you throw somebody into the cave with them, they're confused, they don't understand, they try to get away in some way, they could retreat into their own minds. It is very difficult, very difficult. 212-209-2900. We're going to be taking your calls about talking about loneliness or privacy, your privacy, your being a soloist and not wanting relationships. With all due respects, 212-209-2900. Let's take another call. This is Armand DeMille.
Hello?
Hello.
I'm not sure, but one time I called and you said, you are a very private person. So I don't know. I guess it came from my mother. Usually said, don't trust nobody. No matter what, just be careful. So, I don't know, I'm in that category or not.
Yes, I think you would be in that category. But you see, mothers do this very often, and they do it when they're very insecure. When mothers don't feel good about their lives, sometimes they turn around to their child and they form a bond with their child. And then they get afraid that their child is going to leave them because it's all they have. And when mothers get afraid their child is going to leave them, they whisper things to the child, like in particular, don't ever trust anybody. But the inference is, don't trust anybody but me. And so the child grows up afraid and very attached to their mother. But mom's purpose was not really because she was warning the child. It was really because mom was trying to keep you attached to her. Do you still have a close relationship to your mother?
Yes, I still, and yes, I still have a good relation with her. Even sometimes as not as good as my father.
Yeah. Sometimes your father is a better relationship.
Yeah, he never mentioned anything like that. As long as I'm not fighting with no one, he's okay.
How old are you now?
I'm 37.
You're 37?
Yes.
And are you married?
No, I'm still single. I've never been married.
Uh-huh. And do you want to have a relationship, or do you think it's better not to have one?
Well, I get a little bit scared. I don't feel like having children because my father died when I was young and I...
Did your father die in 80?
Yes, when I was like 17 years, 18 years, like that.
Yes.
Yeah. And I sometimes I say maybe something like that would happen to me, so
I hear. So you feel, now you said you were closer to your father than you are to your mother, but you said your father died when you were 16?
Yes, I was 17 or 16, yes.
So you have a new father?
Oh, no, I'm not living with my mother anymore now. For the last 12 years, I've been living with my brother, and then I'm living by myself now.
I understand. So you're not sure if you want to have somebody live with you, because you're not...
I'm not sure yet.
I understand, and that's what we're talking about. We're talking about some people who are not sure, and everybody will tell you you should have somebody, but they don't understand very much, because it's a very special thing for you to have your privacy, and when you feel like coming out of it, you will come out of it, and there are ways to do it.
Yeah, sometimes, like, as you said, I don't have the skills. When I'm with someone, it's like I am a little bit, I don't know how to act, what should I look for, how the communication should go on.
Yeah, and so, you know, for that reason, it really pays, but it's the last thing you would do. The thing in the world that would be wonderful for you to do around the holidays is you work in some place that's a volunteer place. You know, there they tell you exactly what to do and how to be, and you help people out by working in, for example, nowadays, you know, come Thanksgiving, there are going to be a lot of soup kitchens and a lot of places where they need people to give out food to people who don't have food. And in a thing like that, when you go to it, you don't have very much to do, you don't relate very much, but you just have a very simple job. You give people food and they say thank you. Now, do you think you would enjoy doing something like that?
Yeah, I would be happy to do that.
That's what I thought. So look up the American Red Cross, the Salvation Army, and a number of other places that have soup kitchens, places where they give out food. This gives you a training of being in the world and having a certain reaction to people, because, you know, the skills we don't have with people are the skills of the words. But the skills we do have are the skills of the heart. We're all members on this planet, you know? We're all connected in some kind of a beautiful, graceful way. And when we take away the words and the behaviors, you find that connection exists. And it very often exists around the exchange of food. So I recommend that you and many other people I know who are private people get themselves out there just to be able to give a hand. It doesn't require much at all. Thank you for calling in. What's your name?
Mohammed,
thank you so much for calling in today.
Thank you very much, Mohammed.
Sure.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Sweet man. 212-209-2900, Armand DeMille. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi.
Hi there.
Oh, great. Hi, Armand. My name's Pam. I'm a first-time caller.
Hello, Pam.
I'm married, and I have a daughter. And what I'm struggling with now is you would think I'm a very social person, but really deep down inside, I'm very comfortable just being with myself, and I don't feel like I have a need to reach out and be in a group setting or that sort of thing. But I've always felt a little twinge because, you know, I thought humans were supposed to be so social animals and, you know, not to themselves and this and that. So it was always an uncomfortable situation for me, because when I would be alone, I'd be like, well, wait, I'm totally comfortable being alone. But then socially or with society, it was like this pressure of, no, that's not right.
Do you have any hobbies?
Sewing. I do some sewing.
What kind of sewing do you do?
And I do... just mending, like fixing clothes, and I like to do that. Or I like to be outside in nature. That's a huge plus. But my question to you is, now with my daughter, it's very, I don't want her to feel like she's not being involved. But the other moms, it's like regressing to high school, where it's very clicky and there's that pressure of having to do, and be social when you don't necessarily want to, but it's really for your child. You know what I mean?
Very, very difficult thing, because you're trying, you don't want your child to become an outcast, and the society, the culture demands that you show yourself. They say, you get out here because you're a parent. And
exactly.
You have to know, if you're going to be one of us and our child's going to play with you, we want to know if we're safe, so we want to have you present also. And
right.
It is tough, but let me tell you a secret. No matter where you go to any gathering of mothers, there is going to be at least one-tenth of them is going to be like you.
Got it.
One out of every 10 people there, one of them is as private as you are. And so if you are around 20 people, they're going to be another person there besides you who feels just the way that you do, but they're faking it. But you can see it in their eyes. You can see they're not connected to the whole thing. And so if you get in a room of 30 people, you'll see there are three of them there like you. And when this is kind of when you spot it, when you see it, you just sidle up to them. You don't have to become friends with them. If you get into a big room with 100 people, you have 10 of them are private people, they could just gather in a circle like circling the wagons, you know what I mean?
Right.
And they could just, we don't have to talk to each other. We could just hang around each other and we're fine.
Right, because the real reason why I'm there is just for my daughter.
That's
you
right.
Know?
That's
and
right.
I just feel like to have to be social with them, it's like, it's just exhausting for me. I just want the kids to play, you know. But I just feel like, do I have to reach out?
No, you have to say the following words. Are you ready?
Yeah.
You have to say, it's very nice to see you.
Okay.
Say that.
Got it.
Well, let me hear you say it.
So keep pursuing it.
No, let me hear you say it. You got to practice it now. Ready?
Oh, it's nice to see you.
No, it's very nice to see you.
Oh, it's very nice to see you.
That's it. Say it again.
It's very nice to see you.
That's it. You've got it. You've got it completely covered.
I do say that. It's like sometimes when I get over the hump, I'm okay. But it's just when, you know, say, should I be making calls and arranging these play dates, as they're referred to, which...
Yeah, no, you don't have to do it. You don't have to do it.
Okay.
They'll come your way.
Okay.
That's for the ones who are the obsessive compulsives to do. See, that's the other group. That's the people who have to do it. They need people like you to go along with things, you know?
Okay.
But they don't need more motivators. You're plenty. There's plenty around you.
Okay. So in this case, just kind of be a follower.
And say it's very nice to see you.
Okay.
Nice to talk to you. What's your name, Pam?
Pam.
Pam, congratulations on your first time call.
Oh, thank you.
You did beautifully.
It was
so
funny.
You have a wonderful voice.
Oh, thanks. I just turned on the radio, and instantaneously I was like, oh, my God, I got a call. So, because it was something that struck a chord with me that I've been struggling with, because it's so this social thing that we're put on us as, you know, kids and adults, I think is unfair, because I really don't believe, I think there's some of us that aren't, you know, these social animals that we're led to believe that we are. And some of us just like to be alone, and we're okay with being alone.
I think society has got to realize that exactly what you're saying, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So it is important that we put pressure on everybody, and it is important that everybody who is under that pressure, some of you resist and say, no, sir, we're not going to do it your way. I'm doing it my way. The
right.
One thing you should know is there is nothing wrong with what you're doing, you know?
There's
and letting
a huge
your-
difference. Than being, there's a huge difference in being alone and being lonely.
Sure there is, but
you're
not.
Everyone kind of meddles that together, and that's not the case at all.
Yeah, you don't sound like a lonely person. Thanks for calling in, Pam.
Thank you. Ciao.
Sure. 212-209-2900. This is Armand DeMille. Let's take another call. Hi, you're on the air.
Hello, Armand?
Yes.
Yes, hi. My name is Edmund, and I am married to a woman who is very much like you're saying, and I am totally opposite. It's gotten to the point where I go to weddings and funerals and parties, and I'm totally on the other extreme. I'm very social, a lot of friends, and I almost find God in other people. I see people. I can't imagine living the way my wife lives.
Yeah, and it's amazing. You know, so she may be a social phobic. She could be really private, withdrawn, isolated, but you chose her. And there was a reason you chose her, because she's the rock. She is the rock. She is the anchor to your wings, you see? On your own, you probably would fly off all over the place and never land anywhere. And she gives you a reason to want to come home. And on the other hand, she chooses you because she feels like a rock that's going to sink through the earth. And she has you to lift her spirits. So the combination of the two of you is perfect as long as you don't try to change each other.
Right, that's it. We've been to your clinic many times, you know, my wife and I, and I've sat with you and all.
And I hope the lesson you learned is stop trying to change her.
Right, of course.
That's my lesson.
It's almost got to be a I love my wife dearly. I just can't just surrender to not changing her and go out on my own.
Well, you don't have to go out on your own. You just don't have to not change her. You know what I mean? You go out,
right.
But don't consider
right.
it on your own. You just go out.
Right.
And, you know, keep inside, there's always two sides to everybody. There's a very private side and there's a very social side. It's
right.
It's like a flip of each other, you know?
Right.
But you sure do love her, don't you?
I love her dearly, yes. I just can't understand how you... I feel like she's missing out on so much of life because I believe, like, I don't believe in God very much, but I see God. I learn from people so much that I see. It's all teachings. And I feel she's not getting those teachings that I'm getting from all these people that are exposing the whole universe to me because I'm learning from them.
And she gets her teachings from the inside of her, from her silence, from her
right.
inner world.
Right. She
you know, one day...
She told me that way.
You know, one day what you need to do is to ask her to teach you.
Right.
Ask her to teach you about her world without judgment, without trying to change her. Say, teach me how to be like you. I want to be like you for a week.
Right.
And you'll find it's very difficult to do, but when you do it, you'll learn some magical things about your own spiritual exploration.
Right, yeah. What about her coming into my world, though? I just, that won't ever happen, or?
Leave it alone.
Yeah.
Leave it alone. Because you know, when you pull somebody, they tend to pull back. When you find yourself and you find your own freedom, she'll tend to want to jump on the golden goose and go flying with you. But
right.
you have to be doing it freely without pulling on her.
Right. Yeah. Okay.
Edmund, thank you for calling and nice to talk to you again.
Be well.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.
212-209-2900, Armand DeMille. Remember, tomorrow we do have... Dr. Phoebe is going to be on talking about bipolar disorder 2, and on Thursday, a Thanksgiving special. Hi, you're on the air. One more call.
Hello.
We've got time. Hello.
Hello, this is Leora.
Hello, Leora. Good for you.
Okay. My request is about the whole concept of boundaries, Armand.
Yeah.
In terms of knowing each other's boundaries, that could be interpreted in a way that... you're like an isolate. Could you talk about boundaries that each person should share and let them each other know about boundaries?
Oh, it's an interesting concept, Leora, you know. But
yeah.
I don't think I'm going to address that today.
I thought so.
You know, I don't think I'm going to address
it
today.
But I think it's a great topic.
Yeah, thank you. I think I will, and I thank you for your... I thank you for your call.
Happy Thanksgiving.
Thanks, happy Thanksgiving to you. By the way, my name is pronounced Armand, A-R-M-A-N-D, with the accent on the second syllable, Armand, not Armand, as is the common pronunciation. We got a French-Italian family. 212-209-2900, Armand DeMille, let's take another call. Hi, you're on the air.
Hello, Armand.
Yes.
This is Stefan Omar. How are you?
Hello, Stefan Omar. Nice to hear from you.
It's good hearing from you. Whenever I hear from you, it's like I'm hearing from my twin brother, which I never had.
Yeah, thank you.
Listen, I can't afford to be depressed. This Thanksgiving, I usually spend it alone by myself. When I say by myself, by my spiritual self. So I don't really get into the Thanksgivings and the misgivings and this, that, and the other. But usually, and what I'm going to do again this year is feed the homeless. I'm going to go to a local church, which is very well known in the community, and I'm going to spend about 3-4 hours there, you know, feeding the people.
That's really, it's really amazing, isn't it?
Yeah, and then, so, I mean, when I say I'm alone again naturally, like the song says, you know. So I find it hard to think of being lonely when I think of so many things that are going on in the world, and I'm thinking of negative things. People who are incarcerated unjustly, people who are in the hospital that usually I like to visit people in the hospitals, different institutions, and just...
Gee, Stephen, I've got to get going, you know. He's Stephen Omar.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, I've got to get going. I wish I could listen to more of it, but I thank you for the advice, too, because I'd like a lot of people to get out to their local church and do what they can wherever they see a service being provided. And we're all in it together, you know, friends. Even if you are alone, I know you're with me, and I'm with you. I'll be back with you tomorrow at 1 p.m. You want a copy of today's program? You go to thepositivemind.com.